let's go ahead and get started. We have one item on our agenda this afternoon. We have a representative from Smith Schaefer here, I believe, who will lead us through this. So, floor is yours.
All right. Thank you, Council President. My name is Jason Boynton from Smith Schaefer. Appreciate you letting me come to the meeting and present the results of the audit. So we're looking at the 2004 financial statements. This is the CAFR. Would everybody get a copy of the CAFR or one was available to them? Had a chance to look at that. So I want to start out just talking briefly about the audit, and then as we've done in the past, we've taken some highlights out of the financial statement. We call it a trend analysis, and then we'll walk through. I got about 50 slides here. I'm going to go through them pretty quickly. So if I don't touch on something you have an interest in or a question, just stop me as we go along, and I'd be happy to entertain that. So just results of the audit. We met with the audit committee and went over the audit as well as some minor procedural recommendations and covered the auditor's responsibility letter. We talked about that we issued an unmodified opinion on the city's basic financial statements. A lot of people refer to that as a clean opinion. It means that we, in our opinion, the financial statements here included in your CAFR are fairly stated in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. We issued the CAFR in June, as we have in the past, but should point out a couple of items. Even though we issue an opinion overall on the city, there are a couple areas that our firm specifically doesn't audit. It's actually audited by other CPA firms, and we rely on their work and their opinion for the numbers that go into the statement. And that's the case with electric and water utility funds, RPU. They have a separate auditor, Baker Tilly, and RPU received an unmodified or a clean opinion on their statements. And then this year we included the discreetly presented component unit, the Destination Medical Center Corporation activity in the financial statements. That met the definition of a component unit, which is a separate entity. That's includable in the financial statements because of the relationship between the two. And we have a primary benefit burden relationship with the MCC. So those are included, and those financial statements were audited by other auditors, Clifton, Larson, Allen, who as well issued an unmodified or a clean opinion on those. The CAFR also is submitted annually to the Government Finance Officers Association, the GFOA, for their certificate of achievement for excellence in financial reporting. So we submitted that for 2014. We received the award for 2013. We submit it now, and then we find out notification toward the end of the year whether or not we've received the certificate. We've received it for many years, and we certainly expect that 2014 meets the level of achievement for earning the award. In addition to issuing the opinion on the financial statements, we are required to do some special testing on federal awards. Those are federal grant dollars that the city receives. And spends. A lot of people refer to that as a single audit, if you've heard that terminology before. And those procedures are in process. We're doing that. A single audit report is due September 30th, so we'll issue that prior to the due date. Don't anticipate, based on past audits that we've done in single audits, that there will be any issues relative to the federal awards. All right, so as I said, we're going to take a look at some of the financial information for 2014. I got about 10 years worth of history here. I'm going to focus primarily on 14 because that's the most current year, but if there's a comment on the history, I'll point that out. If anybody has any questions, again, speak up. We're going to look at two types of funds. So the city uses fund accounting, which is typical of governments to use fund accounting to account for their information. So we break things up into individual items. And we have governmental funds, and then we'll have proprietary type funds. I'll show you in a second here. But governmental funds are primarily your general fund, which is all your governmental activities with the exception of all these other items that we break out. So special revenue funds like the library, municipal rec. We did make one change during the year. We actually, for financial reporting purposes, broke the Mayo Civic Center out into its own fund. We just have one capital project fund we call construction improvement. It encompasses all our capital CIP activity. Within that fund, there's a lot of individual projects, but we just report at the fund level for that. And then debt service funds for some outstanding debt issues. Governmental funds are primarily supported through revenues, through property taxes, aids. They do have some special revenues. you know, some fees that we collect for the service we provide, but the fees don't cover everything to cover the cost of operations of those activities. That's different for proprietary fund types, where fees are supposed to cover all of the operations. So all of our utilities, parking, electric, water, the fees that we charge the users are supposed to cover their costs. So that's the differentiation between the two. And then within proprietary fund types, we have two types: enterprise, which is outside customers, so citizens of the city. Internal service funds, as the name would imply, are funds that we use to charge departments of the city. And so we'll take a look at those. That's self-insurance through our RISCA self-insurance fund and IT and equipment revolve. So that's what we're going to look at today. All right, so our general fund here, a lot of these charts are going to be similar. It's by year, you're going to have multiple bars. Revenues are probably in the first one, expenses, and then any change or a couple of charts less than fund balance. But as you can see here, overall revenues, so we're a little over $65 million in the general fund, $66 million. Expenses were a little bit less than that, so we generated an excess of about $2.3 million in 2014. We saw an increase in revenues of $2 million, primarily through LGA. We got our first LGA increase in the last 5 years. We saw an increase of $1.8 million there. We have higher expenditures. Part of it's accounting for public works projects. We're doing them more within the departmental budget than maybe through CIP in the past, as well as higher police costs. If you break down how we fund operations in the general fund, you've got your property taxes here in this color. That's it's about $33 million of our $50 million tax levy goes into the general fund. Represents about 50% of the funding needed for expenses. The blue is other revenues, going to be LGA, state aids, and so on. Then the top is in lieu of tax payments, so this is, you know, equivalent property taxes coming from the utility operations. We have about $11 million from electric, storm, sewer, parking, and so on. So we generated a small, as I said earlier, surplus of about $2.3 million. If you look at where our reserves are, then in the general fund, we've got unassigned fund balance here, and then this is total expenditures. So we had that $66 million you saw in total expenditures, and our unassigned fund balance is at $29,431,000. So that represents about 45% of annual expenses we have sitting in general fund reserves. So we're up about 2 percentage points there. We do have a minimum adopted policy of not less than 5 months of annual operating expenditures, which is 41.5% if you do the math. So we're above the minimum threshold there at 45%. So general fund is looking in good shape. One of the reasons that we have to maintain those that 5 month reserve, that we adopt that policy, is for cash flow purposes. So you can see our main cash revenue sources for the general fund are property taxes and state aids through the LGA. And they come in primarily a couple times, June, July time frame, and then in December. So you can see what happens in the general fund cash balance. We start the year at $30 million, and then we spend money every month for operations to a low point here, just a little over $10 million before those dollars come in. We start it over again. Dollars come in, it's a cycle. Special revenue funds, so listed out here. I mentioned earlier we did break out Civic Center and it's its own fund separate from Municipal Rec. But we're going to look at most of these. A couple of them are relatively small, so we don't have charts on them. But starting out with library, the library spending is just shy of about $7 million in revenues and expenses. Funding primarily comes from property taxes, $5.5 million through tax levy. It's about 80% of the overall budget. We also get another $830,000 through the county, which is on taxes assessed on properties outside of the city, so we're not paying twice property taxes there. And then user fees in the green. Expenditures were a little bit less than that, so we've been generating excesses, build up our fund balance. We're at about $2.4 million in fund balance there in the library. That's about 36% of our annual expenses and reserves in the library. Municipal Rec, so this is going to include all of these departments that we've listed out here. Again, now some of these facilities are able to charge service or charge fees for the services. So we collect a little bit more user charges to cover the costs associated with these activities. But we still have a significant amount of property taxes. You'll see when we get to parks, they're not able to charge a significant amount for their activities. So we rely on property tax funding there. But overall, for this fund, about 60% or $5.7 million comes from property taxes. We make up the rest with user fees. We did overall, amongst all these activities, generate about $150,000 excess, increasing our fund balance there to $2.7 million, which is 29% of expenditures. I break a couple of these departments within municipal rec down. Start out with the rec center here. So they're able to charge these amount here in user fees from activities, but it's not enough to cover costs, so we do levy property taxes. Although they haven't utilized all their property tax levies in years, so they have generated excess within that particular department in their budget. We levy about $500,000 for the rec center. Graham Arena. Graham covers most of their costs through user fees, but we are short a little bit, and we've got an agreement with the county on Graham where any shortfall of expenses minus what we are able to charge for services is covered 50% by the city and 50% by the county. So there's a $122,000 deficit in 14. You can see annually we got a little bit of a deficit, and then this represents the county share of that $122,000 or $61,000. Golf, almost exclusively user fees, at least a small amount of property tax levy here. We did a little bit more back in the 2008-09 time frame in levy. But you can see revenues overall have trended off. We're at $1,250,000 total in revenues, where we were about $1,350,000 back in 2011. We didn't do much in levy here in those years. We did 25 for this last year, but we were about $166,000 short in golf. Revenues overall were only down about $3,000, just a little bit higher in expenditures. But we'll see on the next chart here, and I think what we're kind of trying to show is that within this whole municipal rec fund, some areas generate excesses which help cover the shortfalls in other areas. So as I mentioned earlier, parks, park maintenance, they don't get much money to charge for their operation, so almost predominantly property tax funding to support the expenditures and costs associated with maintaining the parks and maintenance. But overall, we didn't spend as much as our property tax allocation to the fund, so we did have an excess. So the point was, when you put them all together, municipal rec made about $150,000 and increased their fund balance. The Civic Center. Again, the user charges in the green, here's your expenses. So we essentially broke even in the Civic Center for the year. We also do an allocation of the hotel motel tax of about $1 million. So, there's obviously we're not able to charge enough to cover all the costs. And so allocating a portion of the hotel motel tax to help support operations. We started doing that in 2012. Prior to that, we actually used a property tax levy. Essentially break even, it's got a small deficit of about $20,000 for the year. For the airport, this is the operating revenues, so just revenues on this chart, but your primary revenue sources are coming through commissions, which are parking lot fees that we collect, as well as car rentals and the FBO. The next most significant is land and building rent, which you can see is we've seen some growth through the development out there and generating dollars through rents. And to a lesser extent, landing fees, that trend has been down, we'll go up a little bit from the low in 2011. But overall, when you put them all together, we increased our total revenues by about $250,000 at the airport in 2014. This is operating costs in the blue then, which was up a little bit. We ran a little bit higher with some advertising, some higher professional service costs out there. But you take the total revenues on the previous chart minus these operating costs, and that's the net amount that was earned, and $50,000 is retained by the Rochester Airport Company who manages the airport. And then the remainder is sent back to the city to cover operations and capital. So we saw an increase in the amount that came back at about $800,000. So if I look overall at the airport fund operations, again, revenues, expenses, and net income, so you can see we had deficits for several years, no property tax support to the airport. We did back in 2005 through 2008, but we did add that to the levy in 2014, about $440,000. To the levies, so then that increased that along with the increase in revenues. Expenses were about the same, and we also did, the orange represents transfers out for capital to the CIP fund, so we did less in transfers. Combination of those three things resulted in positive income for the airport for the year. And if you look at their fund balance, those deficits, we had drawn down fund balance through operations as well as capital acquisitions to about a little over $500,000. The excess in 2014, they built it back up to $1 million, so we reversed that trend. Transit fund revenue, so what sources of funds, expenses here. So Transit is primarily funded through federal and state grants. So that's in the purple here. And then user fees in the orange, and then property taxes in the yellow. So he's put about $200,000 local property taxes in toward transit. Their expenditures exceeded their total revenues by about $70,000, so we drew down our fund balance there a little bit during the year. There was a change here when we switched from a cost reimbursement contract, that was the old way that we had done it. And so all the user fees were netted out of the costs. And then when we switched to the other type of contract, we're showing the gross amount of the fees collected for parking and the gross amount of the expenditures. The Bioscience Center. You've got rental income here in the green. So that's the sub-rents or the leases that we collect there. And that covers the costs in the blue as well as the transfers out for debt service in the orange. So last year our transfers were a little bit higher. Revenues were a little lower, so we were in a deficit. This year we are back positive, and our fund balance is back up to about $880,000 there. Debt service funds. Here we're just looking at outstanding debt obligations. First one is a lease revenue bond, so it relates to the Bioscience Center. We owe about $14.5 million. We're paying that down on an annual basis through transfers from that Bioscience Center fund, as well as some transfers from parking. TIF bonds, tax increment bonds, we owe just under $8 million here. And again, we're paying the principal down on that. A lot of this, about $7.3 million of the $7.9 million relates to the TIF portion of the Bioscience Center project to be repaid with tax increment revenues. 2010, we issued the Build America bonds to fund the construction of the Public Works Ops Center, Transit Ops Center, and we acquired a fire truck. So those were interest only for 3 years, and now we started to pay principal. We owe about $25 million related to those, to the bond on those projects. The unique part about this is that this was part of the stimulus package back in 2010, and a portion of the interest cost associated with it is reimbursed through federal grants. We get federal dollars to lower our borrowing costs on those. Mentioned earlier the capital projects fund. We've just got the one fund. We've got about $88.8 million in the fund. That's about 91, so we're down a couple million dollars from the previous year. But all these dollars within the CIP fund are set aside for specific purposes. So we listed kind of the major ones here. Flood control at $21.3 million for future maintenance on the flood control project. So of the $88.8 million, $21.3 is specifically related to flood control. $13.2 million for sales tax for infrastructure projects, part of the sales tax. We got money associated with the turn back of Broadway from the state to the city. So they gave us money for future maintenance and improvements there. So we've set those dollars aside for that specific project. Airport has $3.1 million in their capital balance. And should point out that the DMCC funding, they actually are in a deficit position. They actually have a borrowing from the flood control project to be repaid then with future revenue sources to pay back the contribution toward their activities in the DMCC. Enterprise funds. Again, so it's all user charges funded. So this is what we charge all the users of the parking system. So total revenues there, you can see, at about $6.5 million. Expenses were relatively flat, so we increased our net income. Net income was $1,270,000 compared to $1,145,000 the year before, so we built up a fund balance or unrestricted net position there of about $19 million for future ramp improvements, replacement, capital needs. Electric utility out at RPU. Again, their revenues through fees, they get the wholesale revenues and some steam sale revenues. But on the electric side, we saw no rate changes from 2009 until January 14. They increased rates 3%. I did another 3.5% in 15. Expenses were down a little bit, so they had basically a break-even year last year, but they generated a little bit of a positive income out at RPU. On the water side, revenues are relatively flat. You can see going back over several years. It didn't do anything with rates since 2007, but we did increase them 1.5% in January of 14, 3.5% in January of 15. Rate increases to help deal with this issue as costs have increased, but revenues have been flat. They've been dealing with reduced usage from conservation and those items, and trying to get the rates set to the right amount. And then just taking a look at their reserves, and we're looking at cash, unrestricted cash, and investments, and relative to overall expenditures. So overall expenditures were flat, but we did use up some cash balances. Operationally, we did have a small deficit in water, but that isn't really moving the number here. It's more they used some of their cash for capital needs, part of the CapEx 2020 activity up there. So they spent down some of their cash reserves for capital. That lowered their percentage. The sewer utility, so we can see revenues. We've been increasing revenues through rate increases as part of a rate study. I think that ended up in 2015. Are we doing another one now? We're launching another one to see what we're going to do going forward now from 2015. But you can see the impact of those rate increases. We had lower than expected usage after we did the expansion. So we generated some losses here, but we almost got back to break even in 2014 with those rate increases relative to the expenses. Servicing our debt there, that's you know, taking care of the rates and getting them in line with our expenses has allowed us the dollars to be able to service the debt. On their balance sheet, if you will, their unrestricted cash and investments in the green there. So we're at about $24 million. Our total annual operating expenditures are about $25 million. So we got almost a year's worth of operating expenses sitting in cash reserves there. Stormwater utility, they bring in just under $6 million in total revenues from stormwater fees that users pay. This is the brown is developers, a little other revenue and some transfers there. Expenses were a little over $4 million, so we did generate an excess there. Built up a cash position, net unrestricted net position, about $7.6 million for future stormwater construction needs. Now, internal service funds, again, these are funds that are set up to charge other departments of the city. So we have an equipment revolving fund where we acquire equipment. We acquired $3.2 million worth of equipment. This allows us then to charge out the departments a lesser amount than the departments can pay it out over time, which helps them level their budget. Their budget doesn't have to go bouncing around in years when they have to buy a significant amount of capital needs. So it's worked pretty well. Some years your capital might be less than what the charges are. The last few years we've actually had quite a bit more. So we've used up a little bit of our reserves within the equipment revolving fund, but we'll make that up over the next few years. IT revolving operates similar to equipment, but works around IT. And again, we've spent more than what the departmental charges were. In 2013, I think we added one group, was it the Public Works?
Public Works Operations
Building, yeah. So that was actually adding additional coverage under the IT that we didn't cover before within the fund. But you see we are able to then, you know, years we built up some reserves in those years, and now we're able to spend those out without increasing user charges, departmental charges to the level needed to be to cover those outlays. Self-insurance, operating income, net income, so we've got positive operations within self-insurance, meaning what we charge the departments exceeds what our costs for benefits and claims are. So we've been built in, with the exception of 2012, we built up a fund balance in that position there of about $28 million. That's our reserve against sort of the risk for claims and losses under property, health, and work comp. We did see, so within the self-insurance fund, the departmental charges, the departments pay about $16 million. This covers the entire city. And then our benefits paid this past year were less than that, so we generated an excess of about $1 million that went into reserves. These are the medical premium increases, if you will, to the department on an annual basis. We've done 5% the last couple of years after nothing in 12, and 9 and 10, a small amount in 11. All right, now we're going to look at a few more charts. We're on 41, I told you earlier there's 50. This is taxable market value. So what you can see here, this is within the city, is between 1999 and 2009, about 10 years, we had some pretty dramatic growth in the taxable market value here at the city. Then with the economic downturn, things really leveled off. The yellow represents that state market value exclusion when the state did away with the market value credit. They also put into this market value exclusion, which is artificially lowering the taxable market value for residential properties. But we just included that back in here just to be comparable with the previous years. But after leveling off then for a number of years, we have actually seen some increase overall in our taxable. So we're over $9 billion in total, but $8.5 billion is actually taxable for the state. So it kind of sets the stage for looking at operations. So here's governmental fund revenues. Our primary revenue source under property taxes, I mentioned earlier, $50 million collections. That goes to all, a portion of it goes to the general fund, some to municipal rec and so on. But total, 50, we were allowed to keep the levy the same because we finally had an increase in LG after not having one for 5 years. So we can see we're flat there, and then we got an increase. We did see an increase in non-property, which is your hotel motel tax. If we saw an increase in the rate, so our collections are up there as well. Again, to tax payments, those are those utility payments to the general fund. We get some fees for services. This is across the entire government again as well. This is governmental revenues besides LGA. 2014, we saw a pretty sizable increase, but that was the state money that we got back as part of the turn back of Broadway from the state. Not much in investment income. You can see rates are still historically low, so we're not getting much earnings on our reserves. We get some other revenues. On the expenditure side, departmental expenditures, we spent a little over $8 million for general government, which is administration and all departments within that. Police, we saw an increase. They're up over $22 million. Fire department actually is a little bit less than the previous year, although we have, I think, some extra costs incurred in there. Your general trend, I think, still continues along that path. Here's the amount spent at the airport, and then the transit again. That was that change in the contract structure. Park and rec, I spent a little less than $14 million. Culture, which is going to include the library, they're at $8 million. And the public works, and I mentioned earlier, they're doing a little more activity here within their department than through the CIP, so that accounts for that increase. We've shown this chart in the past. Took our primary revenue sources, so this is property taxes and state aids, LGA, and tried to factor out a couple items to make them comparable back the last 10 years. One item is inflation, so we use the CPI to increase the prior years to the current year. Dollars to make them comparative, and the other one is growth, and we used a population as a measure of growth. You can see from 05 to 14, we increased by about 14,000 people in the last 10 years, about a 14% increase. So what you can see here, property taxes on a per capita inflation adjusted basis is actually down. The levy was flat, but we had inflation as well as an increase in population, so on a net basis, we're getting about $441 per person. Property taxes. LGA, we did see an increase in LGA, so that increased output. I think the trend here was LGA was flat, so as we've grown with and inflation, that number's come down, and we've had to increase our levy to make up to keep to the same level or roughly there. So we're up about $25 between 05 and 14, but actually less than we were back in 2009, 5 years ago. All right, so kind of looked at fund accounting, the fund statements. There are another set of statements within your financial. There's only two pages. They call them statement of net position, statement of activities. This is at a government-wide overall level, and this is on a full accrual basis of accounting. So the main difference between how we do accounting by the funds versus the full accrual is we capitalize and depreciate the assets that we acquire over their useful lives, and we record the debt on those statements. So here's what one of them looks like. It's called Statement of Activities. And what it's attempting to do is here's the total expenses by function. So you got general government, public safety, public works, airport, all the functions, and here's the total costs in 2014. So we'll use public safety as an example. $42,417,000 is the total cost of public safety when you include all the depreciation of the assets and everything. And there's revenues of specifically related to public safety. So we charge some fees for the services that we provide. We generate about $6.3 million in revenues. We get some operating grants or contributions, some capital. It comes to a net cost of $33 million after the direct revenues associated with those functions. Then you look at the net cost of every single one of those functions or departments of roughly $85 million. And how do we pay for that? Well, with property taxes, general revenues of $50 million, some sales tax, some LGA. Okay, so they're just general revenues. They're not specific, but that's what we cover. So these are the net costs of those activities that we cover through property taxes. This just takes a look then by year at the history. So it's the same information there, but you know, you can see primarily our net cost of about $34 million for public safety. That's police, fire, and all those other activities. Works pretty well there. It doesn't work quite as well when we have significant capital contributions like the turnback of Broadway, where we recognize the actual value of the street that they turn back from the state to the city, as well as the additional money they gave us for maintenance. So that particular year, it looks like we made a bunch of money, but in reality, we've got additional costs associated with maintaining that street. So the schedule, you know, they came out with it a number of years ago. It works pretty well in some instances, and in some instances, it has some interesting impacts there. So just a summary. General fund, our unassigned fund balance at 45%, is above our minimum policy at 41.5%. So general fund in pretty good shape, operated in excess of about $2.3 million in 2014. We were able to keep the levy flat with finally getting an increase in the LGA funding. So we get about $6.9 million. It's only about 12% of our total general fund revenues, but we did get an increase there. Library and municipal rec operated at positive results for the year, and their fund balance is at 36.29% respectively of their annual expenditures. We were able to reverse that downward trend in airport fund balance by reinstating the levy there, as well as reducing our capital improvement transfers. We do have deficits in operations in golf and Graham Arena, but offset by excesses in these other departments, rec center and parks, resulting in an overall excess of about $150,000 for municipal rec. Parking fund, we're through annual operating profits. We're building up reserves for future capital needs. As I mentioned, we got about $19 million in reserves in the parking fund. Electric and sewer, there's a fair amount of debt out there related to those bonds, but we are, through the user fees and the charges, we're covering the debt on those. And those sewer increases that we did through 2015 have helped to generate the revenue needed, even though our expected usage was less than we originally projected. Within self-insurance, benefit payments were less than what our departmental charges were, so we added to our fund balance there. We included, I mentioned earlier, DMCC. They're a separate nonprofit corporation, but they met the definition of a component unit discreetly presented, so they're included for the first time on those government-wide financial statements. I guess I didn't point that out, and I was back. They actually come in down here on this statement. They spent $5.4 million, and then we funded that through contributions from the city. And that came out of the CIP fund, as I showed earlier. And then one item I haven't discussed yet, but will be effective for next year, is there's a new GASB, Government Accounting Standards Board, statement that came out. It requires that cities that participate in multi-employer pension plans, so where employers get together and have a pension like PARA, where all the governments within Minnesota participate in that plan. If that multi-employer pension plan is underfunded, then each of the member cities or member organizations of that plan have to include their pro rata share of that underfunded pension liability in their financial statements. So that's effective for 2015, so we'll add that to the 2015 CAFR, so that'll be coming next year. The important thing to note is this is nothing new, this underfunded liability. It's existed for many years. It's just how we're accounting for it has changed. So they, we used to report it in a footnote, just a disclosure in a footnote. Now they're actually requiring that we report it on the government-wide statement, and it happens to impact enterprise fund statements as well. So that's coming next year. I don't see that it's going to impact necessarily funding. The state sets the funding levels. It's not like the city's going to have to make up those dollars that underfunded. It's not like you've got that obligation to pay that. You're obligated to pay the minimum contributions as set by the state. And I think what we're hearing, at least from the bonding rating agencies, is that they've already factored in this underfunded liability when they've taken a look at the numbers for the individual cities. So what they're telling us now is that it shouldn't have an impact as far as our rating and bonding goes. But until we implement and see what the what happens, so that's ultimately what the impact is. So. That's what I have. These are questions.
All right, questions for Jason.
The What is the Rochester share of the para unfunded amount 2014?
We saw some initial numbers. They issued a report, and then they actually pulled it back and said they needed to do a little more work on it. But the initial report that they released, the combination of the general fund and the police and fire was somewhere upwards of $60 million. Okay. Rochester share of the underfunded liability.
That's actually not terrible when it comes to pension funds. And then, you know, looking at this, and what I've struggled with too is the largest unfunded liability that we have out there isn't in the pensions, it's in our maintenance of infrastructure. And is there any way to pull, we don't treat that as a utility, so is there any way to pull out, you know, what our unfunded infrastructure liability is? And it, so if we wanted to do that, the only way we could really do that is having infrastructure funds that cover those. Create distinct funds for those?
Well, I mean, you'd have to go out and evaluate every single infrastructure item within the city to determine, mm-hmm. you know, what's the future obligation for maintenance on this item. And, you know, I think we probably do some work to that extent.
Right. So Richard already has a, they call it a condition index on every
yep.
street.
Yep, right.
So he actually can get you those numbers in terms of what it really takes to, and what the backlog is in terms of what we wish we could have done and funded to maintain all the streets to whatever level. Mm-hmm. He's already got that pretty well laid out.
That's what I understand. You know, part of it is you hear $60 million in the pension, which is not insignificant, but this is at least an order of magnitude larger, and it's the one that, you know, the state's not going to be bailing us out on. So right. at some point, I'd just like to quantify what that liability is.
Yeah, Richard's made a presentation before, and I'm sure he's ready to do it again with any kind of notice, but it would be really hard to do from an accounting standpoint. I mean, we list all the assets. Most all of them are fully depreciated, and then we go back and start listing again any maintenance, significant maintenance that's done to a street or road and start re-depreciating again. But there are also the same kind of thing that happens with our sewer pipes, but then technology changes. So we fully depreciate a sewer pipe, and we say, well, it's going to cost so much to dig that up and replace it, but then we come along, we can actually line it with a liner instead, and we go, oh, wait, that was, we didn't have to dig anything up. It saved a whole bunch of money. Now, well, what was the real, you know, so it's one of those things, it's a combination of modern technology and what is the real cost today to maintain it to a level that Richard's got with the engineering crew does a lot better job of that than we can on the accounting side of the world.
Okay.
Mr. Ruskin.
Jason, nice job with everything. One of the things I was looking for in there was I've been noticing some big numbers coming through on some of our developments that goes in this parkland dedication fund, which it seems like in the past we used to have that money kind of designated for quadrant of the city, and I was kind of looking to see where that fund was. I'm ready to see that. And I know that one recent development out of Southwest, I think it was $305,000 that was, you know, given in lieu of parkland. Which account was that in, do you remember? And is that kept in quadrants? And you know, what kind of balance do we have in that? How can that be? Is that a healthy account now? What are we doing with that?
Yeah, I presume. Correct me if I'm wrong.
It's in the construction fund, that great big capital projects fund there.
It's four quadrants.
It is four
quadrants. Yeah.
There is not a large amount of money in each one of those. I can't remember which one has the most, but it's not overly significant volume in those.
Is that a park board fund access and spend, though, as they see fit?
No, it'll come through the CIP from the projects that you approve in the CIP budget, but it'll be towards certain projects that they bring forth in the park CIP.
You know what the balance is, Paul?
I don't know off the top of my head. I know this year alone we captured about $600,000 coming into park dedication. It is confined to four different quadrants, obviously the different areas tell. And it's confined to neighborhood parks, what it can be used for, the definition for that. It's playground equipment, it's trails and walks and trees and things for those relatives of parks.
I can send you out the amount of money in each one of those easily.
I know we've had a lot of demand for some recreational trails and that, you know, some areas that are really lacking in it, and you know, I know you've got some work trying to get that done, but is that so then that money can be used for that expenditure?
If it's for the neighborhood park only, yeah, that's where the gaps you're talking about would not meet that criteria.
You said trails.
Trails within the parks, yes.
Well, connecting the parks.
Let's just define everything as a park.
We're just one big happy park here, I mean, the whole city.
I will say, I mean, just one more second. As part of the park master plan, we'll be looking at park dedication, how those funds can be utilized, and what those funds should be.
Yeah.
I know Terry, I think, or Brent sent you some information on park dedication, what other cities compared to us provide. bit shorter than that.
Yeah, I know there's some pretty good amounts that are being paid out too, so you know we are collecting some funds, so I just kind of wonder where that was. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Other questions or comments? As Jason said earlier in this presentation, the audit committee did have a chance to review this, and we had no concerns either, for whatever that's worth. Anything else?
If there aren't any other comments, I'd just like to recognize there's a couple of staff people over here, Joy Harris and Eric Thor, both part of our staff, small staff of about 9 people, and now taking care of $320 million in expenditures and over $1 billion in assets every year. And
give it a rest.
Gary McMillan, assistant finance director, I don't see him here right now, but again, a staff that works really hard keeping all these numbers together so that we can provide this kind of information to you and consistently get those kinds of results. So.
I'll echo what Terry said. Good job and thank you.
I know when it was first on the council, remember, we used to have the account payable packets printed off each month and in the packets, and there was a lot of stuff then. So, now when I look at it, it's amazing how many things are going through our books each month, and do appreciate the work that you all do in that. So.
We tried to create a summary report that Mike suggested to kind of help that review of those reports also, because I realize it gets to be an awful lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff there.
All right, anything else? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We'll see you again same time next year.
I do have, if anybody wants this PowerPoint, I'll just leave you at the end of the table.
Okay.
Copies of that if you want to take that with you. If you want it electronically, we certainly can get that to you as well. Just send a request to Dale or Carrie and we'll get that over to you.
All right.
I'll post it on our website as well.
Good. Thank you.
Right next to the budget.
All right. We have, I think, one other business item for this afternoon. Kind of a combination of something Mr. Logic and I have been talking about. And 2nd Street Southwest, the new area in Median. I'll kick it off, I guess. And Michael, you've got some comments as well. It comes from a couple of comments I heard from two different citizens. And a couple of intersections in particular, 18th Avenue and then
22nd.
And 22nd, where if you are sitting at the intersection waiting to make a left turn to head east, some of the plantings in the median have a tendency to obscure some of the vision of traffic coming from the west, and that creates a little bit of a problematic situation. I think, Michael, you researched a little bit as far as who contractually has responsibility for that, and I'll let you take it from there.
No, those are the only two intersections that I've really heard about, I spoke with Mike just briefly before the meeting. He knows exactly which plants we're talking about, too. So basically, what it is there is there's a tall grass. I think they're Carl Forrester grasses that are in the median. And I suspect originally 18th wasn't supposed to have left-hand turns on the way out. And that was something that was changed at the very last minute. So I suspect that those plantings probably never got changed with it, but it's only about, I don't know, 30 or so plantings there. And basically the idea would be on that one, we just replace them with something that's shorter, like the rose bushes or something. The other one is 22nd Avenue. And both of these I think are pretty serviceable as is, but if we're getting complaints about them, it's super cheap to fix this stuff now. We've got a couple of, this one, If the public wants it, the public's right, I guess. But here, when you turn out at Quick Trip, you actually have a new lane that starts right there, so you're not even pulling into a lane of traffic. That said, there's still some uncomfort because there's a couple of shrubs that are right there that block the view, and it's not too hard to pull out a couple of shrubs right there. I was going to bring this forward once we actually got control of the area. We don't have control of it yet. It's still with a subcontractor that we have out there that we're frankly having a lot of issues with. I had three requests. One is let's go out there and take care of those two spots. It's relatively low cost. I'm sure we'll get pinged with a change order or something for it, but not too difficult to do. The other one is, I'd like to direct Public Works to take some action against this contractor. This has been a persistent problem, this particular contractor, Cedar something, I forget the name of the contractor. Do you know what it is?
Cedar Ridge.
Cedar Ridge. RCTC had a lot of problems with this contractor, fired them, and they'll never work for RCTC again. We had problems with this contractor on a different project. We're having problems with them now. Most of the last year, they've been out of compliance in terms of not maintaining the plantings that are in there. You go out there, and there are literally weeds that are taller than 4 feet. And the problem is once that gets turned back to the city, it actually affects our costs because we're building up a big seed bank from all these weeds, the seeds that are forming there. So we're going to be dealing with the issue for years to come as well. And they've been out of compliance for a long time. We've known they've been out of compliance. It's written in the contract. We don't work directly with them. We work with Elcor. But let's just, I don't think Public Works is represented here, so I don't want to speak for them, but maybe have them come back to us and tell us what they're going to do to address this particular contractor. And I'd like to, just not work with this contractor in the future. Make the same decision that RCTC did and just fire them and get them out of the biz. And, it's frustrating when we do that kind of investment and to see it as ratty as it is because they're not living up to their contract. So those are the, modify the small plants out there, take the appropriate, steps against this particular subcontractor is what I'd like to see happen.
And I had brought this up a couple weeks ago, and my error, I don't know that we discussed it fully and got the consensus of the council. Consequently, I don't think we gave staff any clear direction. So that was a purpose for bringing it up again today to make sure that we were all on the same page. Mr. Atkins, do you have a comment?
I heard subcontractor and I heard contractor. Which one are they?
The contractor is Elcor that overall the entire project. Subcontractor works for them, which is the last thing.
So we don't have a contract with this particular subcontractor. So our recourse is with the contractor.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, and I mean, I assume we can specify them not to be used in future contracts.
But I'm trying to address your concern about what to do with them now. We can't do anything with them.
Yeah.
We do something with the general contractor because that's the one that has contracted with the city.
And I think in Elcor's defense, they're beating their heads the same way.
Well, that's the way the legal line has to work, though.
Yep. No,
Is there a bond posted?
For the entire project, I'm sure there is.
Okay.
For the subcontractor, I don't know.
But the bond covers that.
That's
your recourse.
But it's hard because the bond won't cover our costs of going and taking care of the extra weeds.
Pinewood Road.
For the next 5 years.
Let's let Mr. Adkins figure out the recourse.
Yeah, that's fine.
Well, I need to know what the facts are right now, and I'm struggling to understand that. And there's probably a notice provision where you have to put the contractor on notice of a default, and they have to be given time to cure the default. And if they don't do it, then we take the next step. If there's a bond present, what I have found in the past is usually just notifying the bond company tends to get their antennas up, and they tend to get involved because they don't like actions taken against their bond.
That's right.
Okay.
Perfect.
So is that something you wish to have done?
Sure. Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. Is Mr. Atkins suggesting we work through that process, or should we take immediate action and then let the legal side catch up, Mr. Hickey?
So who's the lead on this action? Is Public Works going to lead this and work with the city attorney to make a recommendation, or what's the...
That's kind of what I'm trying to figure out here.
It sounds like it's Park.
No, it's Public
it
Works.
It is Public Works.
Yeah, they have a contract, and city has a contract with Elber Construction and subcontractor. I think if we took action right now, Terry would sure guide us that way, but I think that we'd be violating the contract because we're now involved in those plant material and changes they're making. At best, to have Public Works work with Elcor. Again, that's the first step, whether they call a bond or...
Right, but let's not do anything that compromises our ability to take action.
Yeah. So the city shouldn't go in and modify?
No.
We'd have to do a change order, I think, to do that.
A change order, yeah, to follow the process.
And that's why I was kind of hoping to get it back, but I think there's even a warranty period, and I don't know if that messes with the warranty period if we go in there
probably.
After that.
It probably would, yeah.
Yeah, so...
But as part of that change order, you can contract that part out or modify that.
We'll talk to Public Works and get your report on it. That's the question.
Yeah,
perfect.
That works for me.
Look at it.
All right. Is that clear with everyone?
In that same area, are we getting to get that artwork done ever in that area?
I understand it's in process again. Not a parks issue, but it's in process.
I was told last week. So.
But that the tile's in there, right?
The tile.
At first, I thought it was a blank spot where they were going to put the tile, but that is the tile.
Yeah, it is.
That's the blue ones.
Mr. Campion?
If that's it on that particular topic, wanted to cover one different one. I sent out a note. I realized it was a little bit late for everyone to read. Wondering if there's any confusion or concerns about the note I sent on the Chateau Circle Special District second reading taking place tonight.
Well, in summary, it sounded like you had some concern that the language, you feel some of the language in the documentation, the written documentation, differs from what was expressed in the public comments or in the testimony.
Yeah.
You just want to reconcile that before the second reading?
Taking people back that night, we received 5 or 6 printed pages that were placed on the podium with additional amendments taking place to special district text, as well as receiving a binder that was bound with a number of exhibits inside of it. Those exhibits had different dates. At least I've seen, if you go on our public website that lists the documents that were presented at the meeting, you see an Exhibit A that's dated 6-8, June 8th. And the one that was up for second reading tonight, according to both the City Attorney's Office and the Planning Department, is dated May 15th. So I know that you can, by eyeball, see that the one that was up for second reading tonight includes external garbage, which we both verbally and textually had confirmed did not in the 6-8. So beyond that, there's a range of other exhibit problems and special district text problems. For instance, the special district text actually says that external trash is allowed, so just want to make sure all our I's are crossed and our I's are dotted and T's are crossed before we go ahead and make a new ordinance law. So I was going to ask the city attorney, I'm getting some recommendations or desire to continue the reading.
Table.
Table. All right. So we can table the reading until the next meeting, and I can work with the developer to make sure they agree with all the green line changes that are going to be suggested. So
I would advocate that's a better approach than trying to resolve it in the context right. of the meeting.
I did have a version to present to you guys, but I thought as long as a tabling is an option, I'd rather work through with the developer as well and make sure we're all on the same page about what to go forward. So the only other thing that I got asked this week that I was hoping the council might consider putting on an agenda is the future of the Chateau and what the reuse plan is going to be, what's going on with that. It feels like it's fallen a bit off the radar, and
we don't own it yet.
What's that?
We don't own it yet.
Yeah, so I think that there's some community discussion about where we're going with that, and I've certainly had a few more questions cropping up about, you know, what's the council's desire in terms of where we're going. So having not had it on the agenda in a while, I figured why not continue playing merry-go-round and bring that back just like all the others and maybe have another discussion about it.
I think there have been some background discussions as we've visited with people from other similar entities, and we talk about, and there's a, we have to talk to our DMCC colleagues as well. Mr. Mayor, you might choose to comment, but some things are kind of happening to pull that together, but as Mr. Atkins said, we don't own it yet, so there's been very little that could.
That's pretty key.
It helps, doesn't it?
Yeah. But yes, there have been different conversations that have been going on. It's not that they're secret, but in fact, this week, Lieutenant Governor Tina Smith is going to be the keynote up at the coalition. I haven't talked with her. I've left messages. Her staff has talked. We're still looking at what kind of steering committee should we have and who should be on it. Obviously, Ed and I are both on DMCC corporate board, and probably any further future expenditures may go through that again for funding, like we did with the original. So I'm going to talk to Tina up at Duluth at this, and because that's the point, was saying, does the DMCC, would they like to have additional representation of whoever else? And then we've had some discussions, who should be on the arts community, other community from Rochester, as we look at it. Also on, Aaron has just to confirm with me that on, I've been to the theater in St. Cloud, the Paramount, it has some similar, I mean, it's 2 years older, they restored it. The Sheldon Theater in Red Wing was restored 25 years ago, so we're looking at some of those possibilities. Duluth is in the process of doing one, totally private, I believe, that one, and so Aaron has confirmed that Friday afternoon I'll meet with the person that's going to be doing that to find out just how it went with them. There's different models out there. I think many of us like the model of the Hennepin Theater Trust, who we've met with, where they manage and run basically four theaters, three that we really know of. One is must be more like a black box. They run it. The city still owns it, Minneapolis, but Minneapolis puts no money in anymore. That's a great model. and that's why I was first intrigued on that long before I ever even knew that we were going to buy the chateau. But there are some things. There's really kind of two, and me, it's kind of chicken and egg, and I'm not sure just where. One is, what should the restoration be? You know, is it a theater or something else? Personally, I still want it to be a theater. There's other people that have, even in the community, might have some other ideas. The other is then, no matter what it is, who manages it, and how does that all go? So that's kind of the latest that I can tell you where we're at. But again, we do not own it yet.
Yeah, and I think that's one reason I bring it up, is I've heard through intermediaries and other people that there's discussions going on, and I have interest in being involved in the future of the chateau, just as everyone else here at this table does, because we all agreed to the purchase. So I'd like to make sure, that information that you're sharing is just fundamental to making the decisions about the future. The idea of selecting a steering committee, or frankly forming a steering committee, I don't think has been voted on yet. So that was one of those things that I want to make sure, if we're saying it's a chicken and egg problem, that we're all in agreement about how the future will be selected, and we're not, if we start assembling a board and then I have to come be the bad guy and say, we didn't really talk about what the composition of any such board should look like or who should serve. I think that's really important to have an open discussion about, to say, we've had a lot of people locally who've had a lot of time invested in historic preservation and other community activities. How do we bring the most voices to the table to make this project go off right? And how do we keep from, potentially disenfranchising people who see this as a great opportunity for our community? So, if we're going to continue kind of having the conversations, I think it's a great time to do it. Maybe we wait till the building is purchased. But I also want to put out there that, I think that the way we go forward should be determined by the council. If we're going to move forward with the steering committee, I think that's a great idea, maybe, depending on what the composition looks like. So then we have to get to those brass tacks, if you will, of what that looks like. So wanted to just bring up some thoughts that have been drifting through my head related to the chateau, and maybe see, I'm open to the council's decision about when's the right time to bring it back. If we want to wait till the purchase closes, I guess that would be one great milestone to set up another discussion for. But if we want to be ready to hit the ground running, maybe we want to do it now. So I'm putting that out there for a discussion.
I guess I would just add that Stephen would never let independent council members make this decision, so it'll of course come back to us.
I try to control it. I don't have too much luck all the time.
Don't know what you're talking about.
All right. Anything else for this afternoon? If not, we'll see everyone this evening.
Well, oh. The most important device.
That's right.